As Jesus hung on the cross, waiting to die, waiting in unimaginable pain while God didn't save him, he looked at the people who had done this to him, and he said, "Father, forgive them." Do you ever wonder what his mom said? I wonder if she was able to forgive as easily as Jesus forgave. And then I wonder if it really was that easy for Jesus to forgive. You know, we read the story over and over, and we hear those words, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." And we think, well, he's Jesus, he's the Son of God. It must have just flowed right out of him. And I wonder how much it hurt him to hang on that cross and say, "Father, forgive them." And I wonder what it actually means to forgive. Peter once asked Jesus how many times he should forgive his brother if his brother sins against him. And Jesus' answer was 70 times 7, which is just a symbolic way of saying infinity. How many times should I forgive? Infinity times. When the disciples asked Jesus to teach them to pray, one of the lines in Jesus' prayer was this: "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." Forgive us our trespasses just like we forgive those who trespass against us. In the months that I have been thinking about forgiveness, I've been struck by, many of you might remember the story of the Amish community in which a man walked into a schoolhouse, sent the little boys and the adults in the room to leave, and was left there with 11 little Amish girls in the schoolhouse, where he murdered 5 of them and desperately wounded 6 of them. The Amish hear the words of Jesus' prayer, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." And they hear in that a command. One of the women said this: "When I saw the bodies of the little girls, it just made me real mad. But mad at the evil, not at the shooter." Can you imagine? I'm still in awe of that response. Months ago, when I started thinking about this sermon, I didn't actually expect to have very much trouble with it. We're called to love like God loves. And that kind of love includes loving our enemies. And loving our enemies is about forgiveness. But the more I read about it and thought about it and prayed about it, the less confident I became that I even know what forgiveness is. I mean, when it comes to talking about God's forgiveness, about Jesus hanging on the cross, about his blood covering our sin, I get that. I get that I can go to Christ with my sin. I can lay it out before there. I can do like David when he was convicted of his sin with Bathsheba and of having her husband murdered, and say, "Father, create in me a clean heart. Make me pure and holy." I can do that. I get that. I get that God takes my sin and he wipes it away, that I can be like a new creation again. But when I start thinking about us forgiving the people who've hurt us, I very quickly realized this is a different conversation. See, if I hurt you, you can't erase my sin. If you hurt me, I can't make it just disappear. It's one thing to talk about God's forgiveness, but our forgiveness of those who've harmed us somehow isn't such a straightforward subject. We throw the word around all over the place, don't we? Politicians are always, they're always standing there or kneeling there saying, "Oh, forgive me, I've sinned." What they're really saying is, "Crap, you caught me." We throw the word around. We teach children to say, "I'm sorry," don't we? And to respond with, "I forgive you," when somebody says sorry to them. And by this, we mean to teach our children to let go of things, to put it behind them, to forget about it. In fact, don't we just as often say "forget about it" as "I forgive you" when somebody comes and apologizes to us? We say, "Ah, no problem, don't worry about it, forget about it." It's our way of saying, "I forgive you." And I think that that's as it should be. I think that we should be teaching our children to say, I'm sorry, when they hurt someone. I think it's important that we teach them to say, I forgive you, when somebody comes to them with an apology. If my sister takes my cookie, I need to let it go. If my brother ignores me in the school hallway, I need to put it behind me. If my mom doesn't let me go to that party, or my kid tells me she hates me, or my husband forgets to take out the garbage, or my wife forgets our anniversary, I need to forgive and forget. I need to put it behind me. Because if I don't, our family will cease to function, right? If we hold on to our hurt or our anger or our righteous indignation, our relationships break apart and our families follow suit. The same is true in a church, isn't it? If someone says something in a business meeting, I'm thinking of other churches here. If someone says something in a business meeting and it hurts your feelings, you need to let it go. If a decision was made that wasn't in line with your ministry priorities, you need to put it behind you. If someone did something you disapprove of, you need to forget about it. Because as long as we hold on to our hurts or our anger or our righteous indignation, our relationships will be broken and our church, which is also a family, will follow suit. The same is true in the places we work. The same is true in our circles of friends. If we hold on to these things, if we do not forgive, forget, put it behind us, let go of it, whatever phrase you want to use, things and relationships break. They fall apart. But isn't there a difference between saying to your kid, you need to forgive that classmate who stole your pencil case, and saying to someone like Julie Nicholson, Julie, who was an Anglican priest in the UK, whose 24-year-old daughter Jenny died when terrorists bombed the subway in London. Isn't it a bit different to say to your child, forget about it, when their classmate takes their pencil case, and to say to Julie, forget about it? Someone asked Julie once, you're a priest. Do you feel you have to forgive them? This is Julie's answer. No, actually, I don't feel that. It doesn't matter to me whether people feel, according to the tenets of the Christian faith, that I have a duty to forgive. Maybe so. But the reality is, I don't. The reality is that forgiveness isn't nearly as easy as we make it out to be. I love that one of the little kids up here, when Marianne asked them if they feel better when somebody says, I'm sorry to them, her answer was no. Because sometimes it doesn't help, does it? Sometimes forgiveness isn't that easy. When someone hurts us, they take something from us. More than the tangible things, they take our dignity. They take our power. They take our freedom. They take our peace and our joy. When someone hurts us, we become victims. And that's not okay. I have, over the years, had a lot of conversations with a lot of women who have survived abusive relationships. And the only women I see who come out the other side healed are the women who can get beyond being a victim. As long as they feel and see themselves like a victim, which is not a human being, it's something else entirely, they cannot get past their hurt and their suffering. See, to just forget about the hurt isn't really an option, because the hurt changes us. We aren't the same after the hurt as we were before it. And somehow when we require someone to forgive, it sounds like we're asking them to condone what was done, doesn't it? It's like, if I forgive you, I'm saying what you did is okay. Or at least it's like acting like it maybe didn't happen, the whole forgive and forget, pretend it never happened. But that response further strips us of our dignity and our humanity. It's like we're making the victim responsible for the perpetrator's wrongdoing. You know, I know that he or she did something really bad to you. If you could just forgive, you'd be okay. In other words, you're suffering and it's your own fault. Forgiveness isn't that easy, is it? Julie Nicholson, again, she said, to forgive a man who killed my daughter and others on one level is condoning. And if not condoning, it's like saying, hey, this is not quite as bad as it actually is. It's one thing to ask your child to forgive someone who stole their cookie. We're talking about forgiveness at another level. If we're going to forgive the way that God forgives, if we're going to love like God loves, then we should offer the forgiveness, regardless of whether or not the one who hurt us apologizes, shouldn't we? We've been taught that all our lives. Our love, even of our enemies, should be unconditional. Except we are not God. We can't help but need the one who hurt us to say, I'm sorry that I hurt you. There's this thing deep in our souls that longs to hear that from the people who've caused us damage. Alan McBride lost his wife in an IRA bombing in Ireland a number of years ago. And he said of the IRA leader, I needed him to acknowledge what he'd done, and he didn't do it. See, the problem was that the leaders were responding. Alan McBride wrote all sorts of letters and tried to connect with the people in the IRA to just get an apology. And every time what he heard were things like, I'm sorry this happened to you. In case you're confused, that's not an apology. I'm sorry this happened to you. There's no responsibility in that. I'm sorry this happened to you, but you have to understand. Alan's response to that was, no, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to understand. All he wanted was a simple, I'm sorry, and he didn't get it. And then many years later, Alan was instrumental in some reconciliation projects between the IRA and the Protestants in Ireland. And he was sitting in a pub with an IRA guy and a Protestant guy, and he told his story. And the IRA guy sitting there said to him, Alan, what happened to you should never have happened. And I, as an Irish Republican, am sorry. Alan kept waiting to hear the, but you have to understand. But it never came. Finally, someone had afforded Alan the courtesy of just saying it was wrong, with no excuses or rationale or you have to understand, no justification. It was the apology he'd been waiting for. We need those who hurt us to acknowledge the wrong they've done. Because wrapped up in apology is a confession of our humanity. Wrapped up in that apology is somebody looking us in the eye and saying, not you're a victim or you're nothing, you are a human being of worth and of dignity. We need that. We need their acknowledgement of that. When they hurt us, they deny our humanity. When they apologize, they give it back. Except that our humanity and our dignity, our worth, it isn't really in their possession. It's not like the one who hurt us has a little box and they took our dignity and they stuck it in the box and they said, I'm going to hold on to it over there. And the act of apology is giving it back. We kind of think that's what it is. We feel like they stole it from us. But they aren't holding on to it. It's not something that belongs to them. It's not a tangible like that. Their apology will not turn us back into the people we were before the hurt. Once we have been hurt like that, we can't go back. We want to. We desperately want to. But we can't become the people we were before we suffered that way. Their apology doesn't suddenly magically erase what happened. The act done to us doesn't disappear. It's not erased. It's not forgotten. Even if they apologize with all genuineness and remorse, the hurt was still done. We are still changed because of it. I have always thought of God's forgiveness of us as Him erasing what we did. And this sermon has completely messed with me. Because I don't think our sin is completely erased until we have our new bodies in heaven. See, we're talking about things we do or don't do or say or don't say. It's not like God goes back in time and takes it from happening. What he does do is he covers it over with the blood of his Son, so that what is seen when he looks at us is Christ's blood, not our sin. Suddenly, our forgiveness and God's forgiveness have a little bit more in common. It doesn't matter what somebody says to you after they've hurt you. They can't change what happened. They can't turn you back into the person you were before the hurt. Nothing can do that. The change has happened. Besides which, more often than not, the apology doesn't come, does it? More often than not, the person who hurt us that terribly never tells us, what I did to you was wrong and I'm sorry I wrecked your life. It just doesn't happen all that often. And yet we still hear Jesus saying that we need to forgive. So what does he mean by that? How are we supposed to forgive? Not the little things. I think we've got that. But the big things. Can he really expect Leslie Parrott? Leslie's little 11-year-old daughter was kidnapped, raped, and murdered in Toronto. Can he really expect her to forgive the guy who did that? It took years before he was arrested. I think 10 years before anybody found him. Can Jesus really expect her to just forgive this guy who ruined her life, who took the life and the innocence of her 11-year-old daughter? What exactly does forgiveness look like if it doesn't condone the act? What does it look like when it's offered without any evidence of remorse from the perpetrator? This is what Leslie Parrott said. She's a woman I'd like to meet one day. She said this: unless we're able to let go, if we have to hold on to that sense of hate and having been crossed close to our heart and let it define us, it defines the rest of our lives. It defines everything we do. Unless we're able to let go, we can't hope to move forward, albeit with an aching hole in our hearts. Offering forgiveness doesn't change the act. It doesn't stop the suffering and the pain of the loss. But it frees us from some chains that are wrapped tightly around us, tying us to an event in time, to a particular person, a particular evil. And without forgiveness, those chains stay strong. We don't forgive because the one who hurts us deserves our forgiveness. That's not why we forgive. We don't forgive because what they did doesn't matter. It does matter. We don't forgive because we don't think the one who hurt us should deal with the consequences of their actions. Leslie Parrott, at no time ever suggested that the guy who hurt her daughter should get off. No, she wanted him locked up. She wanted him put away where he could hurt nobody else. We forgive because it's the only way that our hurt can be healed. It's the only way the gaping, bleeding wounds of our soul can start to heal over and turn into scars. Judith Shaw McKnight had a husband who gave her HIV, who as a child, her uncle assaulted her repeatedly. Her mother and father regularly beat her and called her names in drunken rages. She nearly killed herself with a drug addiction because of the self-hate that came out of all of this. And she said this: I thank God for forgiveness because it freed me inside. I love this. It's like a laxative. It purges you. It cleans out your heart, your mind, your arteries. You just get it out. But even she acknowledges that forgiveness doesn't come easily or quickly or necessarily even consciously. In reference to forgiving her husband, she said this: I can't tell you when it happened, but I can tell you that I woke up one day and I didn't hate Joe anymore. Perhaps Jesus didn't command us to love our enemies because our enemies deserve our love. Maybe they don't. Perhaps Jesus didn't model forgiveness of those who hurt us because it's the right thing to do. We do it out of duty. Perhaps Jesus asks us to love and forgive even those who make us victims, because he knows it's the only way that we're going to reclaim our own power, our own dignity, our own peace, our own humanity. I don't forgive you because it's good for you. I forgive you because if I don't, it'll kill me. Every time I hold on to that unforgiveness, I take what you did to me and I give it more and more power. I feed your bad actions long past the time that you have finished acting against me. The Dalai Lama wrote this: forgiveness is difficult and complex. It can involve issues of justice and reparations and, of course, deep-seated anger and the wish for revenge. Forgiveness is not a question of forgetting the wrong done. If you've forgotten what was done, there's nothing to forgive. Forgiveness involves refusing to allow yourself to give in to anger and to the desire for revenge. Kathy Power, who was an anti-war activist in the 60s, and who, in the process of her activities, ended up killing a police officer and spent 10 years living in hiding before she finally turned herself in, said this about forgiveness. God says, "Behold, I make all things new, not patched, not repaired, but new." And I think that's what forgiveness does. Anne Marie Hogan was 19 when she lived in a tiny little community in Newfoundland. Next door to her family was a man who was a little bit odd, but who had been adopted as a son by her father. And so the families were in and out of each other's homes all the time. One day, this boy next door entered Anne Marie's home with an axe, wounded her, killed her father. For years, she was filled with hate and rage at the man who'd victimized her and her father. For years, the only thing that defined her was being a victim. Until one day, she stopped seeing him as a monster or as a demon, and instead saw him as the sick man that he was. And she stopped seeing herself only as a victim and reclaimed her own humanity. This is what Anne Marie said about forgiveness. "When I learned to see him as a human being, I learned to see me as one. Forgiveness sets you free. I don't have any of that anger and bitterness anymore. I'm free to enjoy life." In the words of author and documentary filmmaker Helen Whitney, "Forgiveness is not an instant cure, but something that grows over time. Perhaps at the deepest level, forgiveness is the memory of lost possibilities, the enormous presence of absence, an ache for what could have been, but is no more." And finally, in the words, this woman is incredible. She's one of the architects of South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And her name, I'm going to pronounce it wrong, is Phumla Gobodo Madikizela. "What we really need is the grace of God to empower us so that we can rise from our pain and reach out with forgiveness." I love that quote because it reminds us that all on our own, sometimes forgiveness is impossible. We can ask people to forgive the bits and pieces, but those true, unforgivable atrocities are only forgiven when the Spirit of God dwells in us and does the loving and does the forgiving for us. We teach our children to forgive because without forgiveness, families fall apart. Perhaps if we were more ready to forgive those not in our families, our whole world would be a better place. Perhaps if we started seeing all of humanity as our family, our world would be a better place. But before any of us start tearing ourselves up because we haven't been able to forgive, take heart that it is truly by the grace of God, whose Spirit fills us with power, that we can reach out with forgiveness. The answer is not simply to try really, really, really hard to forgive. The answer is to surrender your pain and your indignation and your anger and your hate to God and to allow Him to replace those things with love. We are called to love like God loves. It's very hard. And without God doing it for us, dare I say, impossible.